fire on the earth. Our Holy Father has said the church is missionary by her very nature. The church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. It's my special delight today to be able to introduce to you a good friend, Rabbi Dr. Mark Kinzer, who lives here in Ann Arbor. I've known Dr. Kinzer for 30 years or more, and he's kind of at the front end, really, a key leader in what's called the Messianic Jewish movement, you could say, within that is Jews who have come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah. And Dr. Kinzer's also written some very important theological work. He's involved in dialogue with the Catholic Church and the Messianic Jewish community, sort of at the forefront of that as well. And I've asked him to come in this week and share with us both his own story, but also he wrote a new book recently called Searching Her Own Mystery, Nostra Aetate, the Jewish People and the Identity of the Church, which I'll let Dr. Kinzer open up for us over the next few days. But again, just delighted to have him. Welcome, Dr. Kinzer.
Great to be with you, Peter.
Yes. Well, Mark, you know, I've known your story, an amazing story, over these last 30 years. And I wonder if you tell our listeners a little bit, what is the Messianic Jewish community and how, and your own personal story maybe is the best way to unfold all that.
Yes, yes. Well, the Messianic Jewish movement is something that originated in the late 1960s, interestingly enough, around the same time as the Catholic Charismatic movement. And there had been Jewish Christians for a long time who were Jews who had come to believe in Jesus, were part of the church world, who had some sense that Jewish identity remained significant, but had no real clarity about how that should be expressed in any distinctive way. What happened in the Messianic Jewish movement were these Jewish Christians were coming to believe that the way of life that they had should be expressing the kind of life that you see described in the book of Acts in the Jerusalem community with James, the brother of the Lord. And there was a sense of that Torah observance and a traditional Jewish way of life and keeping the Sabbath and living according to a traditional Jewish pattern was still something that Jewish believers in Jesus should do. And so communities began to form of Jewish believers in Jesus who were trying to find a way to live as Jews.
Yeah, and in a simple way, they were saying, look, we read the Acts of the Apostles, and like them, we're Jewish. Yeah. And somehow they maintained a Jewish identity because Jesus had a Jewish identity,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, of course.
Jesus went to temple, Jesus
exactly.
You know, understood Torah, prayed the Psalms, did all that. And they're saying there's got to be some kind of continuity. I can't have total discontinuity with that as I come to believe in Jesus. They're trying to figure out what does all that mean.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And there is great diversity in the Messianic Jewish movement about how to live that out and mm-hmm. to what extent we should be adapting elements from the Jewish tradition of the last 1900 years and to what extent we should simply be drawing on biblical patterns and try to replicate what Jesus and the apostles were doing. But what really holds common for all of those who really identify with the Messianic Jewish movement is the sense that there's a distinctively Jewish way to live the good news of Jesus the Messiah.
And so how did you personally yes. come to discover that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I grew up in a home that was really quite strongly identified with Judaism and the Jewish people. My grandfather was an Orthodox rabbi and a Talmudic scholar, a rabbinic scholar that was very highly regarded in the city of Detroit from Eastern Europe originally. My father was a leader within our local conservative synagogue and a very staunch supporter of Israel. And I grew up in this environment, but I was also growing up in the 1960s, and really the 60s had a greater hold on me yeah. than our local synagogue yeah. did. And so the revolutionary ferment of the times, the anti-institutional sentiments, really I was more captivated by that world, and I couldn't identify with this archaic institution that the synagogue seemed to me to be. And so I didn't have any faith in God. I didn't believe. I was more committed to the transformation of society and living an authentic life as an individual. So this is where I was at when I was in high school. At the same time, I really was very serious about issues of truth and reality. And I remember still one of the things that disturbed me most was just thinking about death. Thinking about the fact that our lives in this world end. I read one novel which had a very simple statement that really struck me. It just said that 100 or 120 years from now, every individual who's alive on Earth today will be dead. That reality just struck me like a ton of bricks. And it just seemed to me that anybody who didn't think about these questions had their head in the sand. And so the sense that my life was limited, that I was mortal, was something that I thought about a lot. In terms of how I came to believe, well, I could say lots of things about the process, but, you know, this is a mysterious thing for all of us, you know? All I can say is that all of the other options for understanding life just seemed eventually to dissolve in and seem unconvincing to me. And I came more and more to believe that God was real and that God was personal, not just an idea, but a someone, not a something. And that he was seeking me. And all came down to actually a 7-week period where I was traveling in Europe with a backpack in 1971, and all on my own, and I was just I was trying. I'd made this decision. I needed to figure out where my life was going, and that I needed to do this on my own, apart from my closest friends and apart from my family. And so I was wandering around Europe, trying to figure out, with the determination that when I came home, I was going to have decided upon what my life was about. And in that 7-week period, every book that I read, every building I went into, many of which, of course, were cathedrals and other institutions, monuments to a civilization that had once been Christian, spoke to me about the reality of God and the person of Jesus. And when I came home, I had opened myself up to this reality, only discover that my three best friends had all come to faith in Jesus in the 7 weeks that I'd been
gone. Is that right? Wow.
Yes. This for me was an encounter with the living God. And the thing about Jesus that was most appealing to me was Jesus the revolutionary, Jesus the countercultural icon, Jesus the radical who got to the very core of things and was able to transform and renew at the very bedrock of reality. And then the very first teacher that I was led to, a friend of mine introduced me to him, was a Jewish follower of Jesus who had been raised in an Orthodox Jewish home and was living very much his life within the Jewish world. And his name was Haskell Stone, and he was all of these values that I had, these somewhat revolutionary, radical values, they were really embodied in Haskell. But the thing which he had, in addition to that, was this commitment to the Jewish people and this sense that Jesus was supposed to make us more Jewish. And so he taught me, and when I was 19 years old, within maybe a month or so of my coming to faith in Jesus, that I should live as a Jew. I should go back to synagogue with my dad. That if I got married, I should marry a Jewish girl and raise a Jewish family. And then he told me something that ended up having surprising consequences. He said, "Mark, you shouldn't become part of a church. You are a Jew, and you need to live in a distinctively Jewish way," which is what he had done. I said, "Well, okay, I'm going to do this, but I don't know what that means for me, you know." And so, what happened as a result of his advice was I did the things he told me to do, and suddenly Judaism became meaningful and beautiful, because now it was not simply a set of archaic customs. I had a sense of the reality of the living God, the mystery of God in the midst of the Jewish people, and suddenly the prayers of the synagogue and the way of life of Judaism was this glorious, beautiful thing that I wanted to find out how to live that as a disciple of Jesus.
Was there, during that time, you know, that 7-week period,
yes,
and then coming back and finding that some of your closest friends had come to believe in Jesus, was there a moment when the light went on for you and you just said, you know, Jesus actually is the Messiah of the Jews?
Yes.
He's our Messiah. I mean, did that actually, is there a moment you actually remember that, or a period where just...
There were two,
more gradual?
I think it was a more gradual, but that there were two really decisive moments for me. One was actually on the plane as I was flying back home from Europe. And I had spent a weekend with a Christian family in England. And I had gotten to know this woman who was the wife of this Christian couple because she had been engaged to my brother and had come and had spent a couple of months with my family in Detroit the year before, and I really liked her a lot. And my brother had ended the relationship with her in part because of her strong Christian faith, and my brother didn't understand it, and it didn't make sense to him. And so I spent this weekend with them, and I went to church with them. I was asking them all kinds of questions. This was at the very end of the 7-week period when there was so much ferment in my own mind and soul. And at the very end of our time, she gave me this book, The Cross and the Switchblade by David Wilkerson.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it, and it didn't seem to be the kind of book that I would want to read. You know, I was a very rather pretentious
young
intellectual,
yeah, right.
You know, and this was a book about, you know, a Pentecostal preacher in New York City working with drug addicts. And I put it at the bottom of my book bag, you know.
Sure.
But when I was in the airport before taking off, I remember thinking, you know, I'm going to have to write a letter to this woman to tell her thanks for all she did for me. I'm going to have to say something about this book, so I have to look at it at least. So I took it out, and I just began to read it thinking I would just do a cursory overview of it. I couldn't put it down. And I finished the book midway over the Atlantic. And the sense of the power of God, of a personal God at work in the lives of these young people, breaking them free of drug addiction, renewing their lives. It was something I didn't think was possible today in our world and in our lives. And I remember at that time praying and saying, God, if you are real, if this is true, please reveal yourself to me in this way. And of course, then I was met at the airport by my friends, you know, and it was right then I discovered they had come to faith in Jesus in the 7 weeks I'd been gone. So that was one of the two decisive turning points.
Well, that's a really an amazing story. So your friends were there to receive
yes.
you joyously. Couldn't wait to tell you what happened.
Exactly.
And you shared this joy together. Isn't that something? God's timing. God's amazing that you of all people would end up with The Cross and the Switchblade in this 7-week journey and all the other books you would have brought, and boom, you end up reading that, and that is kind of the piece that really opens your heart more to really crying out to Jesus as Messiah. And friends, tune in again tomorrow. We'll be here with Dr. Kinzer to continue his story. God bless you. Have a great day.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'm delighted to be able to offer you my new booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? At the heart of the new evangelization is a fresh proclamation of the gospel. But for many people, even many Catholics, they wonder, what is the message? What exactly is at the heart of that proclamation? In this simple booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message?, I take a look at and present in a very specific and simple way what is the core of what we're called to proclaim in this great and important missionary moment in the history of the church. If you'd like a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.